Beyond the Beauty is a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host, Bobby Brown.
So Gucci Westman came upon the scene when I was still at the Bobby Brown Cosmetics brand, but I watched her and I thought she was so cool. And all of a sudden she just popped up and was doing every cover and every celebrity. And I was like, who is this girl? And then I met her and we became instant friends. Gucci Westman launched her brand, Westman Atelier, in Barney's in 2018. Her brand is beautiful. It's clean. I'm really excited to talk to Gucci, to hear her path, how she went from being a makeup artist to brand founder, and just catch up and see everything she's doing. So here's my conversation with Gucci Westman. Hey, Gucci.
Hi, Bobby.
It's so nice to see you.
It's so nice to see you. I was so honored to be asked to do this. And as you know, I always talk about you. I'm one of your biggest fans. Aww. And I always actually talk about you as a mentor, you know, for me.
Oh, well, I've been watching and I have been amazed and proud. And I don't know how you're doing what you're doing while raising the three kids. And, you know, I especially during this pandemic, I've just been watching every little thing, as we are all doing.
I know. I mean, I think it's kind of incredible that we have been, as a culture, you know, I feel like we're quite resourceful and shifting over to what is working, you know, such as podcasts and things like that. And I think the productivity for us has been really amazing and inspiring and impressive. It's like, who knew? I thought, you know, this was definitely not what I had predicted, which is great.
But you are a true entrepreneur, because if you're not an entrepreneur, it's easy to say, oh, everything's so bad. You know, we're in lockdown. You can't do anything, can't get out. And, you know, you shifted. I saw you shift. You know, I mean, you know, we're gonna go back first. But I know that when one of the stores you were in closed, you know, that must have been a big bummer when you were in Barney's. Like, that was a big, you know, deal for you.
Yeah, that was a big deal. I still am so saddened by what happened to Barney's. You know, we felt like it was such a perfect platform for us to launch with them. You know, the type of boutique environment and how it's really it leans itself, you know, to specialty kind of littler brands, I feel. And that was tough. Luckily, you know, David, well, my husband, he kind of, you know, saw it coming. So we didn't suffer too much, which, you know, is fortunate in terms of loss. But of course, it's sad that they closed and we had to quickly, you know, be as nimble as we could and pivot.
And Gucci's adorable, gorgeous, brilliant husband is David Neville. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
One of the founders of Rag & Bone, still one of my go-to clothing lines. But I met him early on, you know, before you even launched. But where did I meet you the first time? Because I'm trying to remember.
I think the first time we met in person was in London at Cadogan Garden Hotel, or either the Connaught, maybe.
Connaught
Hotel. And you were there doing press, and I was there, or maybe you were doing a fashion show and press, and I was doing the same, you know.
Right.
And I met you in the lobby, you were checking in, and I had to just like run up to you and say, I love you and you're such an inspiration.
Remember it the other way. I ran up to you and I spotted you and told you I loved you, but whatever. One of us did it, so.
And then I think I joined you and Steven for dinner.
Yeah.
I think I just crashed your dinner because I was going downstairs and I saw you again and I just wanted to soak up as much time with Bobby as I possibly could.
And I remember talking about possibly, you know, you doing a line. I was still with the brand at the time and, you know, you talked about going into skincare before makeup.
Yeah. And you told me that was ridiculous.
Well,
that was actually, we had maybe spent a little bit more time and you said, so what are you doing? What's happening with your line? And I said, well, you know, I'm kind of thinking I want to start with skincare. And it felt very sort of, as I said it, I felt how not convinced I was myself. And then you really solidified that that moment, because you said people know you for makeup. You need to start with makeup, and that, you know, kind of stuck with me and resonated, and you know.
And the rest is history. I mean, so let's go back for a second, because I don't always go back to people's, you know, childhood, but yours is so interesting. You were born in California, and were your parents hippies calling you Gucci?
Yeah, they were hip. Well, it gets even better or weirder, because yes, my parents were hippies. And my given name when I was born was Chelsea, after the Joni Mitchell song, Chelsea Morning.
Uh-huh.
And so we moved to an ashram, a Kundalini ashram, when I was, you know, I guess I was maybe one or something like that. And you get given ashram or, you know, sort of Hindu names. And mine was Guru Charan, which means he who sits at the lotus feet of the guru. I didn't even get a she, I got a he.
Uh-huh.
And which kind of is telling. And I remember my parents' best friend at the time, Gary, and his nickname when he was younger was Gucci. And so he started calling me Gucci, and it kind of stuck. And then he consequently named his daughter Googie.
Oh God, how lucky did you get? You didn't turn into a Googie.
I felt like, oh, at least I got a little bit, you know.
Chic.
But then, you know, I grew up in Sweden because my dad is Swedish. So when I was 10, we moved to Sweden, and Gucci was a complicated name to have growing up in Sweden.
So what was your first job as a makeup artist, and how did you even decide you wanted to be a makeup artist?
So I went to makeup school in Paris to, you know, kind of wind back a bit, and it lasted for a year, but I decided I got what I needed after 4 months. And then someone told me about a makeup school in LA called Joe Blasco, and it was only an 8-week course or something like that. And I ended up going there. It was terrible. They asked me to teach after 2 weeks. And I thought, this just shows how not much of a real kind of education this is, clearly. And they told us that we needed a tackle box for makeup, and we needed a director's chair, and we needed some type of torch. It was so stupid. It's like, you would never need any of those things as a working makeup artist, as you know, Bobby.
A toolbox. And you need a toolbox. Where are you going to put your makeup?
I know, but it wasn't like a tackle box, though. I mean, that was so heavy and bulky. It wasn't. Anyways, of course, I got all those things, and I got some crappy car. I borrowed money from my great aunt Rita to get this Fiat Spider that always broke down. And I had my director's chair and my things in the back. And then they told us at Joe Blasco to go to the American Film Institute and look for work. So I signed myself up for a deferred payment movie, where I then was hired to do wardrobe, hair, makeup. I think I did some form of continuity. That was my first kind of job that, you know, doing multiple people's makeup.
But I remember when I first started hearing about you, I was still a working makeup artist, but I was more into the brand at the time. And so my freelance career kind of got behind me, and I never wanted to let it go, but I had to, because I just didn't have time. Anytime anyone called for a job, I couldn't commit to it, or I was busy. But I remember I started seeing your name in Harper's Bazaar, and everyone's like, Gucci, Gucci, Gucci. I'm like, who the hell is Gucci? Like, your rise was really quick, and you have a lot of enviable, like, clients and fashion shows. What were some of the early big things where you were like, all right, I've arrived? And how did you get them?
So I don't know that I ever really acknowledged that feeling, I have arrived. I felt like it was constantly evolving. You know, and I'm sure you can relate to that feeling as a freelance makeup artist, but I had started in LA when I lived there. I had started to meet people such as Spike Jones, and I was doing a lot of music videos and commercials with him, and he was very loyal to his team. And once I kind of joined that crew, that was it. I was always asked to do you know, those videos and all those things. And that was really fun. We just had so much fun and it was so creative in terms of the concept. Then I simultaneously met Bruce Weber and Annie Leibovitz, and it all happened, you know, through a photographer named Paul Jasmine, who is this wonderful photographer who lives in LA. So I ended up doing a lot of Italian Vogue and things like that with Bruce, and Annie hired me. I was working at a special effects lab called Todd Masters in the Valley. So, because I wanted to learn everything I could, I just wanted to soak up and get as much time in the saddle as I possibly could in terms of experience. So I wanted to learn to do special effects. And so I worked at Todd Masters, and I had a terrible headache every day because of the resin and all the chemicals. But then they were hired to do a shoot for Vanity Fair with Annie, and to create a puddle of mud. And Lori Goldstein, the stylist, was on that shoot, and she ended up, you know, fast forward a few months, I worked with her another time assisting Paul Starr on a Vanity Fair shoot.
Oh, cool. That's a big break. But you're also, your highlights include all these cool celebrities that you are friends with. So how did you get in this, like, cool circle of Hollywood it girls?
Well, back to Spike, you know, it all kind of like was a puzzle that sort of like just got, you know, fell into place. But going back to Spike Jonze, he asked me, well, first I did this movie called Being John Malkovich.
Oh, I love that movie.
Buffalo 66 was first. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't like necessarily a fun experience, but it was, I think, cool in hindsight to have done it. And I was friends with Christina Ricci, and, you know, so I did that. That was a month in Buffalo. And then Spike asked me if I would do this movie called Being John Malkovich. And I said, I'm not really that interested in movies. It wasn't fun. I didn't really like the experience. And he said, but this one's going to be different. So of course he ended up convincing me, and I became very good friends with Cameron Diaz. And after we wrapped the movie, she said, how would you like to come to New York with me and do some shoots and Saturday Night Live? And mm-hmm. That's when I was like, are you serious? I thought I had died and gone to heaven. So I ended up going to New York with her. She mentioned my name on Letterman because I did this blue eyeshadow. And she said, my makeup artist, Gucci Westman, you know, because he was asking about the blue eyeshadow. And then I did a cover of Harper's Bazaar with Patrick Demalchier with her. And that was my first big editorial cover on a big actress.
And you've done a lot. I mean, are you still like actively working as a makeup artist? I know right now there's shoots are starting to happen again. How are you handling all that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate to have clients that are very loyal that I would always, you know, say yes to, but I don't, however, want to travel. Really, you know, at the moment, I may be able to be kind of convinced, but at the moment I don't really feel like getting on an airplane to LA, which is where most of them live. But I work with, you know, Jennifer Aniston and Kate Hudson and some of these girls that I've worked with for a long time. And yeah, I don't know. I think it just really was a combination of word of mouth and momentum. You know, it was really, the timing was really kind of great for me.
How long has it been since your makeup company has launched?
So we launched with Barney's in 2018, and we kind of just had no doubt that Barney's was the right launching partner for us because of the size, the scale of our brand. We're growing little by little, but we felt that we would disappear in certain other kind of environments, but we felt that Barney's could really help nurture us. And when we went to Barney's and we were discussing our ideas, and we said we wanted to be a refillable brand, and they said, well, that's not going to work for us. That's not a business model that we can sustain here. And, you know, so then we kind of, obviously we funded the brand ourselves, and we thought we can't launch then with them if they're going to say that that's not going to work. So we are now, of course, working toward becoming refillable, which we will be. Our compacts will be the first thing to be refillable in 2021. And we are completely committed to being as sustainable as we possibly can, you know. So, but it's like you we're constantly trying to be reflective as a group of individuals at Westman Atelier and kind of learn and see where we can do more, how we can do better, and, you know, constantly, I think, curious.
Mm-hmm. Well, your makeup style really reflects in your brand. I mean, you're known for, you know, this clean, beautiful, even skin, and that seems to be what you're going for. Like, talk about what you think the Westman, you know, woman looks like.
Well, I think that there's definitely, that's my personal aesthetic, you know. I think there's definitely something for people who have a desire to have more coverage or more expression in terms of their makeup. But I just, for me, I was so compelled by the performance aspect, combining the ingredients, focusing on the safety, the responsibility of the ingredients, the sustainability of the ingredients, their efficacy, and also have them perform. Because I felt like there was something, I couldn't really find that on the market when I was looking for something that was really driven by these kind of two factors, like the wellness and the performance. Of course, I wanted to look chic as well and feel beautiful and have kind of evoke an emotional moment and feel joyful. And I just wanted to inject these things into a brand that felt clean for me. And I had a lot of experience, you know, working with labs, with Lancome. You know, I was their creative director, global artistic director for 5 years. And I worked very closely with the chemist. You know, I worked with them every 2 weeks. I went to Paris and I worked at the lab, and I learned that this magic can happen when you are working directly with the chemist. And I never, you know, sort of forgot about that. And that kind of engagement that you have with these people who are such incredible formulators. And when they can understand what you're trying to achieve coming from you to them, you know, then that's a different kind of outcome, I think, because they really understand the passion behind it, the desire to create something that is specific. And I want to share this idea of my kind of philosophy on how I like to see women. I love amplifying them and making them, you know, just an enhanced version of themselves. I'm not a big fan of transformation when it comes to, you know, real life makeup. Of course, when it's makeup artistry and you're doing a shoot, it's different. But I've always liked to see the skin penetrate. And I don't have perfect skin. I have rosacea. But I do feel like, you know, it's frustrating, but I feel like it was a great catalyst for the brand. And I feel like you can kind of fake it, you know, and even if I don't have perfect skin, I can kind of fake it. And, you know, just kind of not having the approach of masking everything, you know, accepting your flaws a little bit and working with them, or areas that you aren't so into. You know, I feel like you can kind of work with what you have and make it better and boost yourself with this confidence.
But I will ask you, what do you think you learned from working with Lancome and how you run your brand now?
That's a great question. Lancome was a very well-respected French cosmetics brand that I grew up. My first makeup product that I ever bought myself that was expensive was Bienfait du Matin from Lancome. And I used it to make my skin look tan, you know, and that was when I was maybe 15. And I remember thinking, oh, this is so expensive, I better make it last. And I think I learned from Lancome how to, you know, to the reach for product development has to be a larger kind of focus. It can't just be your immediate kind of idea of a woman. It has to be a global concept. And you learn quickly what works, what doesn't work, where you can cut corners, where you shouldn't cut corners. And there was just a tremendous respect for what I did in that house. You know, they looked to me for everything from the spokes models to, you know, the entire lineup, to creating limited edition products, to travel, to, you know, it was very sort of immersive and a really strong partnership. And I learned so much from that.
And what's the culture inside your business? How would you describe it?
We have such a strong team. Everybody loves what we're doing and you can feel it. I think they're all in this mission because they want to be part of something that is, you know, it feels as if we're doing something that we're proud of. There's a transparency. I feel like none of us will ever stop until we kind of are satisfied.
People want to do something special. I mean, I think especially now, there's so much out there that is not working, that it's so nice to see something that is working. So congratulations to you and to David. So since this show is called Beyond the Beauty, I always ask my guests the simple question of what does beauty mean to you?
That's a great question. I think, you know, when people are really comfortable and confident in their skin, they become more beautiful to me. I think that the aesthetic, of course, I'm a very aesthetic person. I love aesthetic, you know, if it's architecture, if it's interior design, if it's animals, on a superficial level, you can see a person's face first, you know, but then when you start to get to know them, they can become either more beautiful or less beautiful, depending on who they are, how they carry themselves, what their priorities are in life. I think it's really an all-encompassing thing to be beautiful.
So I just have a couple more questions. Talk to me about your health, your diet, exercise, supplements. You know, I know all those things are important. Like, what could people that are listening take away? What are you loving these days?
You know, so I just want to say that I'm not like always super healthy for sure. I believe in an 80-20 type of philosophy. I exercise fairly regularly, I would say at least 6 days a week. I do something, maybe seven. So I do believe, you know, that exercise, starting the day with exercise is energizing. I drink hot water with lemon my first thing that I have in the morning. And for breakfast, I kind of alternate. Lately, I've been having blueberries, kiwi, apple, and almond butter. And then I make my own almond milk. And then I just make an almond milk latte. And I love this Blue Stone Lane Australian coffee. For lunch, I tend to have lentils and just a lentil salad or lentil soup, usually because it's filling and it's satisfying. And then dinner, what do I have? I mean, my brother's amazing at cooking. So, you know, I don't have that much fish, but that's maybe once a week now I have fish tacos or some kind of grilled fish with veggies and brown rice or, you know, and I'm actually not drinking alcohol during the week.
How'd you do that?
I know it just became, I felt like, you know, we have to kind of try to pretend that we're living in some type of normalcy. And we didn't drink, you know, during the week in the city if we weren't, you know, going out socializing. And it just feels good to kind of have, you know, be more focused and less foggy. I mean, of course, at night when it's cozy and sitting by the fire or something, you want a glass of red wine. But I'm trying not to.
And what about supplements?
Supplements. I'm obsessed with supplements. I feel like I'm super into my supplements.
Yeah.
And I work with this doctor in LA, Dr. Dominique Reed, and she specializes in women's health and hormones and preventative aging. And so I will do anything she tells me.
Uh-huh. Okay. Very cool.
She's brilliant.
Oh, really cool. And finally, what are some of the products you cannot live without?
Well, products I cannot live without. I mean, from my line, I love our Vital Skin Foundation. You know, I have rosacea. I love my Beauty Butter Bronzer. The brushes are, as you know,
they're amazing.
You know, the quality, they're beautiful, they're sustainable, and the quality is really, really there. I love the mascara. I don't know. I love it. It's kind of like an edit for me. So I use all of it. And then what products I need? Purple shampoo. My hair gets red otherwise. I like Rahua. They make really nice, clean purple shampoo and conditioner. What other products can I not live without? I really love this body balm by Mab and Stokes. Feels super hydrating and just great on your skin.
Well, everyone's going to have to tune into your Instagram and your Insta stories because you are really good at sharing some of your favorite things. I'm really proud of you. I just have to say, I'm really proud of you. I love your brand. I love what you stand for. And, you know, I think people out there are loving what they're buying, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bobby.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.